Doug Cox, executive producer, artistic director of the Vancouver Island Music Fest. Time is running short. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, Dan. Thanks.
Things are coming together. Obviously, we're counting the days.
We sure are. Yeah, we're less than a month away now, so we're working pretty long days, just trying to get all the details nailed down.
Now, in 2012, for the first time ever, you sold out the Vancouver Island Music Fest, and then you, for good measure, you did it again last year, and you're coming, so far as I know, you're right down to the point where it looks like you're going to do it again this year. Does this mean you've kind of perfected the formula? This will make it the third year running.
Well, I don't know. I mean, our goal is to have people want to come to the festival as opposed to come to see specific headliners all the time, because that's kind of a dangerous trap, and that's not really what the festival's all about. So it certainly is. I mean, obviously, we sold out a Saturday night tickets very fast this year, and that's because we have Bonnie Raitt coming, and that's fantastic. But there's a lot more to the festival than just the evening performances, and I still think about 3/4 of the tickets sell to people that get that, and I'd love it to get to the point where people understand that even if they haven't heard of the performers they're coming to see, that they're pretty well guaranteed to have a great time.
Now, you've been at this for quite some time. Does it surprise you that you're already at the 20th anniversary this year of the Vancouver Island Music Fest? You must have some thoughts on that milestone.
Yeah, well, it does surprise me. You know, my family's been doing it for 17 years now, and we certainly never expected it to become our life's work, Marcy and I, but it kind of has. And it's hard to believe that it's been that long, although we've watched a lot of kids grow up at the festival, and we've watched people come and go. We've watched some people pass away. You know, we've seen a lot of volunteers that might disappear for a year or two just because of their own personal lives and then come back to the festival afterwards. So they're definitely aware that the time has passed, for sure, but I never would have guessed that we'd be here this long.
So does that add some pressure when you're sitting down to try and put together the Vancouver Island Music Fest 2014 when you're thinking, oh, this is also the 20th anniversary?
Well, we had quite a few discussions about that, and at one point we talked about maybe just doing a kind of greatest hits lineup for the festival this year, and then we decided not to do that, actually, and that we would just carry on with trying to book things that are relevant to today, and trying to also just pay tribute to the history of the festival in terms of honoring some of the older musicians that play the festival, and making sure that we continue to represent different styles of roots music and folk music and that kind of thing. So I don't think so. I don't think there was added pressure.
Now, every year has its own character in terms of the musical landscape that you present. You have to be pretty pleased with this year's lineup. What are you expecting to be some of the highlights?
Well, that's always a really hard question to answer, because I'm hoping that everything will be. You know, I know that some people will like parts of the festival better than other parts, which is just normal because everybody has different taste, but I'm excited about so many different things. I mean, Sam Baker's coming back, the great singer-songwriter from Austin, and he was at the festival last year, I think. He's gotten a lot of notice in the last year all over the world. Rolling Stone magazine just rated his album as one of the top releases of the year. So for people that like that, I mean, it doesn't get any better. You know, Jimmy LaFave is another great Texas musician who's coming for the first time this year. He's one of my favorite singers in the world, so I'm thrilled he's coming. Roy Rogers, the great slide guitar player, it's his first visit to the north end of the island. And if you like that, the same with the Royal Southern Brotherhood, which features Devin Allman, who is Greg Allman's son and Dwayne Allman's nephew from the Allman Brothers, and Cyril Neville from the Neville Brothers. And I think this may be their first Canadian festival. And that's going to be a great one. We've got an orchestra from Korea coming this year called Dalsori that's taken me 3 years to make happen. And we got support from the Korean government for them to come and teamed up with some of the other Western Canadian festivals for that one. Angelique Kidjo, the great African superstar who I've tried to book for years. Of course, Bonnie Raitt. It just goes on and on and on, you know. We've got some killer world music this year. We've got great blues. We've got some great French-Canadian music, Mexican-Canadian music, which I think is the first time we've got that, with a wonderful young artist named Kiki Escamilla. Bluegrass, country, I mean, you name it.
You've always done quite a job of putting together a very cosmopolitan feel to the Music Fest. And you've just laid out, obviously, another good argument for why that is so. Going back to Bonnie Raitt, that's a major score. How long have you been trying to land her for the festival?
Well, you know, there's a number of artists that I just kind of have an open offer on them. And she's one of them for sure. So you just kind of try and get them every year, and sooner or later, hopefully they become available. And this was our year for Bonnie, you know. So she's been on the list probably for 17 years. I've been a huge fan of hers forever, both as a musician and just a music fan. So it was just the right year for that one to happen.
And obviously that's a big part, a big piece of the festival as it's starting to come together. You spend probably half a year or so starting to piece those individual artists into this mosaic that will be the next Music Fest. How has that process felt as you've built the 2014?
It's felt really good. I mean, it's usually kind of an organic process. You have to book somebody, and then you've kind of filled that slot for a style or genre, you know, of music. And then I try to create a really rounded program that features different styles and different age groups and male, female components and different geographical locations for the bands. There's a whole bunch of things that go into that. I also try to make sure that I book bands that are excited about playing with each other. So sometimes there's a little mini theme that happens. Like this year, we have three bands that feature the harp. I don't mean the harmonica. I mean the actually strung harp or stringed harp. So coming with Roy Rogers is a fellow named Carlos Ruiz, who's an amazing Latin American harp player. And then I have some friends from Scotland called the North Atlantic Trio that feature a wonderful Celtic world music harp player, and a group called Choreo Ario, who feature, I believe it's Paraguayan harp. So when I knew that one of them was coming, I thought, well, we've never done a feature on the harp before, so it would be kind of cool to be able to do a workshop that just features harp players, you know. And once you get one of those, then you try and build something around it a little bit. We've got the same with fiddle players this year, because we've got Twisted String, which is the group that Oliver Schroer put together originally to play his music, of a bunch of fiddle-playing kids. And a lot of those kids have gone on to become kind of the new generation of Canadian fiddle stars. And then the BC Fiddle Orchestra, which was Daniel Lott's group, and the same thing. A lot of the young fiddle players out of Victoria that are now really well-known came out of that group. So when I got one of them, just figured it'd be a lot of fun to have both of them here, because they all know each other and are very excited about getting up and playing together too. Our stagehands are going to hate me because those are two really big groups. But, you know, part of the fun of programming is to try to put things like that together.
Indeed, and the Grierson stage is always a good example of that, and fairly often there's some very tight quarters there. There's a lot of work for the stage hands just to get everybody in there, mic'd, and ready to roll. And that's part of the magical collaborations you put together at the Music Fest. Now, aside from harps and fiddles, are there maybe less conventional combinations that you've got dreamed up that you can share without letting the cat out of the bag?
Oh, I don't mind letting the cat out of the bag, because it's all up there on our website at this point. People can go look and actually see the full festival schedule. There's a few I'm really excited about. There's one called Grooves in Orbit, which is the Royal Southern Brotherhood, who talked about, and Kiki Escamilla and his band, and then a wonderful young band from Africa called Makumba. And they're a bunch of young guys that play, I guess the best thing to call it would be African hip-hop music. So that's going to be an amazing session. The blues sessions that we have every year have become super popular and probably the most crowded of all the sessions that happen on the Grierson stage. And this year we've got Roy Rogers and a wonderful First Nations performer named Leela Gilday, who's been at the festival before. And one of the guys I'm real excited about is a man named Leo Bud Welch, who comes from Mississippi, I believe. And he's like a real blues man. He's in his 80s, and this year is the first year that he's left his home, really, to tour around. He's a blues and gospel guy. He's completely the real deal. And he's been winning Lifetime Achievement Awards and stuff all over the place this year. He's kind of an undiscovered blues man. Blind Boy Paxton, who was an absolute favorite last year, is coming back. And a great local musician, Luke Blue Guthrie, and then a wonderful guitar player, singer-songwriter from Shawnigan Lake named Rockland Moran. So that's the blues lineup this year. That's usually a really popular one, like I said. What else? I'm just looking at the schedule right now. There's, of course, a lot of great song sessions.
And of course,
songwriters.
And, of course, the Sunday morning gospel session is bound to be another winner this year.
Absolutely. And it's the first year we've kind of had a headliner concert on Sunday morning, but we've got the Blind Boys of Alabama this year. So we usually turn that into a jam session. Kind of, but this year it's just going to be them doing the Sunday morning gospel concert. So, that's going to be a very exciting show for sure. I was just going to tell you about one more that's kind of interesting. We have one called Music from Big Pink, which for anybody who's a fan of the band will recognize the title Big Pink as
indeed
one of their great albums. So there's a group from Alberta called Up on Cripple Creek, which features kind of the all-star A session players of the Alberta music scene doing their tribute to the band. And then joining them will be a wonderful female bluegrass francophone group from Manitoba called Oh My Darling. And Jimmy LaFave will be part of that one, and a great young group from Vancouver called The River and The Road. So they're going to do a big tribute to the band in that session.
Really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it'll be a good one.
Now, the last 2 years have given you the opportunity to work with the maximum number of festival goers and volunteers on the site because of the sellout, and I'm sure that brings certain challenges and helps you either reaffirm or not whether you've got your numbers right in terms of how many people you want to put on the Music Fest site. You obviously don't want it too crowded. At the same time, you want a good crowd there. How many people does that work out to if you sell out and fill up with volunteers? 'Cause usually
it works out to a maximum of 10,000 people on site per day, and that is indeed our largest number that we'll let the festival grow to. Just because if it gets bigger than that, it's going to ruin the festival. Basically, it'd just be too big, especially around the daytime stages. So that's the size it's been now for 3 years, and we're not going to let it get any bigger, which represents a bit of a challenge for us because, of course, costs keep going up and up and up and up. So we've noticed a fairly significant raise in the cost of producing the festival, especially between this year and last year. And we have to figure out how to basically keep it affordable and keep the quality up at the same time. And the first answer to that is always sell more tickets, but that's not something we're going to do. So that's our big challenge for the future now, is to basically figure out how to make that work. Something else that happened this year was our campground sold out for the first time ever in advance as well. These success problems are actually good problems to have, but it's all fun to try to juggle it simply because of you want the festival to be accessible to everybody. But as we become more popular and we are limited in our space, these the campground's going to sell out probably every year now as well, you know, in advance.
So this is the first year you've sold out the campground in advance of the actual music fest. That didn't happen the last 2 years out.
No, it could have happened last year, but we didn't let it happen because we wanted to give people lots of warning that we were going to put the entire campground, make the whole campground available to sell in advance. So last year at the festival, we actually went around and gave out handbills to all of our campers saying, you know, kind of be aware that, that next year the whole campground is going to be available in advance. And we've advertised it for the whole year as well on our website and in the newspapers and all that kind of stuff. We have some people that were unhappy that we did that, but it's kind of what you have to do, you know. It also helps us a lot from a safety factor and an administrative side, because we now know who's staying in every single camping spot. And there's a lot of people that really want to see the campground remain the kind of safe, comfortable place it's been for the last few years, and this helps ensure that as well.
Now, you instituted the tarp rule two music fests ago, and that seems to have worked. I take it we're going to see that back this year?
Yeah, and basically what that means is that if you set your tarp down in front of the main stage and you leave it for longer than an hour, it's just simply rolled up so that other people can sit in front of the main stage. And the reason we did that was because, unlike a lot of the festivals, we have daytime programming on our main concert bowl stage. So the performers were noticing sometimes that they'd get up and to play on that stage, and even though there might be 1,000 people out in the crowd, they felt like they were playing to just a big sea of tarps because the crowd was so spread out. So kind of in fairness to everyone and in fairness to the performers, we went with the no leaving your tarp there forever rule. And generally the response has been super positive for that one.
Last year brought Twilight in the Barn, a significant departure from some of the recent music fests. How did that go, and are we going to see more of that this year?
That went very well. And yes, it's happening again this year too. So what that means is that starting at 4 o'clock on Friday, there'll be concerts that happen in the barn until about 9 o'clock or 9:30 every night. And it's kind of a nice break from people that either aren't interested in what's happening on the main stage at any given time or that just want to be part of a smaller, more intimate thing during the night, too. So there's some really great shows that are going to be happening in there on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights as well.
Now, there have been changes to the laws around alcohol sales since our last music fest. Is that going to bring changes to the festival?
No, it's not. We discussed that one at length, and we're very happy with the sort of safe feeling that the festival now has. So even though we could have changed things this year and made the entire main bowl of the festival an open beer garden, we decided that that's not what we wanted, and from feedback we got from our audience members as well, that wasn't what they wanted either. So the only change that you'll see is there was an 8-foot fence in front of the beer garden out of the main stage. That's now going to be a 4-foot fence so that the sight lines will be a little bit better for people in the beer garden. But we decided we didn't really want to change anything that much because we want to keep it safe, and we want people to feel safe. And there's really no need for it, you know. Probably maybe sold a little bit more beer if we did it the other way around, but the lack of comfort for us and our security people and our audience would have just made it miserable. So we're going to take real baby steps with that one, no matter what the laws do.
So in some sense, this will be another trial. In essence, you tweak as you go.
Yeah, a little bit. Although I don't think you'll see any changes in our the way we run our beer garden. Even next year, you know, or the year after that, probably. I think we're all feeling pretty comfortable about how we run things that way. I mean, the beer garden, again, is a substantial income earner for the festival, but it's more important that people feel that they're in a safe place and that they can sit comfortably with their kids and feel secure. You know, if we lose that part, then it's not going to be the festival that we want. Another thing that's happened is that our local community of businesses has been incredibly generous in the past to the festival, and it's why we're able to put on such a great event. Some of them think that we're successful and rich now or something like that. So even though the festival sells out, we're still, if you look at the business model, it's not that secure. It's not like we're raking in thousands and thousands of dollars every year. And then we're also noticing this year that because of the economic downturn that some of our sponsors are pulling back the size of their sponsorships, which is also creating higher costs for us, basically, to produce the festival. So, yes, 10,000 is the magical number for that site. And we don't ever want to move to a different site because the site has become such an important part of the entire vibe of what Music Fest is. So that's really the challenge, is how do we find new ways to create money for the festival in order to keep it healthy at the level that it's at. And, you know, I don't know if that's interesting talk or not.
Well,
it's not really what people come to the festival for at all, but the economics of it is extremely important, you know.
True, and it's important to put this under the right in the right setting, that this is a non-profit society. This is not an intent to go out and make buckets of money.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's kind of a new climate that's been happening with festivals, where there's a bunch of for-profit festivals that are starting all across Western Canada now, and they're running on the model of what was traditionally the non-profit sector of Western Canadian folk festivals. I believe very strongly that there's a significant difference between the two, because what we do as a nonprofit is we are, those of us that are in charge are stewarding this thing and hopefully creating a organization that's going to remain healthy and give back to the community and be passed on to the community once we're gone. You know, Music Fest should and hopefully will outlive us all. We don't own it. Once we go, we don't own any part of it. So I've devoted my life to working for festivals that are nonprofit organizations with the belief that it's a good thing to do something like this and have it supported by the community when it in fact is not going to be owned by anybody, and that, you know, part of our responsibility is to try and leave it in really good shape for the future, basically. So once we're gone, someone else will hopefully come and take it over, and it'll become what it becomes at that point based around what the audience wants and what the volunteers want and whoever's running it, you know. But that's a significant difference between the for-profit and the non-profit model. And the for-profit ones are starting to pop up all over the place now, because the entire Roots music scene and the music industry is seeing that the festival scene is actually becoming one of the few places now where there's money to be made in the music business. I hope that made sense. You can probably tell I'm pretty passionate about all that stuff.
Well, obviously, and the music festival is obviously the place where magic is made as well, and that's what you want to keep.
Yeah, and it's the whole folk music world has really become an industry over about the last 10 years or so. The important part of Music Fest is that it is a community event, and that community is actually, first of all, the community that it's hosted in, which is the Comox Valley, but secondly, it's the community of people that come to the festival and support the festival. And we're able to give back now by doing things like our Music in the Schools program and giving away our bursaries and doing our free concerts and workshops and all that kind of stuff. And hopefully, as we become successful, you'll see us doing more and more of those kinds of things as well.
Now, you recently got another big 2-year funding commitment from the federal government. You've got to be pleased with that.
Very pleased with that. Yes, we get great support from the federal and provincial governments. We're very happy about that. I mean, we are the biggest tourist destination, cultural destination event on Northern Vancouver Island, at least. So it's great. You know, it's wonderful that they recognize that and recognize our contribution at this point in time.
And you got an increase in funding this year over these 2 years, I believe. You got to see that as a vote of confidence, perhaps.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we're on a multi-year funding level now with the federal government, which just started 4 years ago or 2 years ago. And it just shows that they believe in what we're doing and they believe in the strength of our organization and all of that kind of thing. So very happy about that. Yeah.
On the other hand, are you still struggling to find support from local government?
Yes, to be completely honest, we are. We get support from them in some administrative ways. As far as I know, we're 2 out of about 40 festivals in Western Canada that are nonprofit folk festivals that pay for the use of our site. We pay our own hydro bill. We get zero funding in terms of hard cash from the city councils or from the CVRD here in the Comox Valley. And that's weird, you know, and it's actually made it harder for us to get funding from the federal and provincial funders because they actually ask if we get any municipal funding and we have to turn around and say, no, we don't, you know. There are people in the council, especially the city council of Courtney, who definitely support what we do. But we have yet to see that translate into any substantial support, if I can say that. I think it's important that people understand that when we talk about funding, especially from local government sources, that we're not talking about taking money away from other things that are equally as important, if not more important, like medical and schools. You know, I feel like those things are obviously as important, or roads or that kind of thing. But there is money that's allocated every year through the councils to support the arts. And what I'd love to see happen with Music Fest is that we get a fair shake at that, because we're certainly the top cultural tourism destination event that happens on Northern Vancouver Island.
And a major economic driver.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know from economic impact studies that have been done elsewhere that we bring $5 to $6 million at least into the Comox Valley.
Now, this year has, or since the last Music Fest, I should say, we've seen another great Music Fest concert series coming out. Lots of different acts, different venues. And this year you branched out to include Campbell River's Tidemark Theatre with the Back to Garden Mini Fest, as you called it. You've got to be pleased with how well that went. And as a follow-up, is that a sign of more to come in that concert series vein?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to continue. We've actually got another show coming at the Tidemark. And excuse me, that's the drummer Terry Bozzio, who's a very famous drummer who played with Jeff Beck and Frank Zappa, and he plays the biggest drum set in the world of tuned drums. If you haven't seen him, you can check him out on our website, and that's happening in October. So that's the next show that we're going to do at the Tidemark. We'll continue to do the smaller shows at the Cumberland Hotel and the Comox Band Hall. And we'll probably get into doing some other things, too. We're certainly going to extend our Music in the Schools program, which is just where we basically pay performers that are traveling through to go play in a school. I love that part of what we're doing. And then we started this year with some free workshops and concerts as well that were open to the public, to anybody who wanted to come. And we'll be doing more of that, too.
So obviously, we're down to the final days. You're happy with how things are going. Obviously, we're all looking forward to another great music fest, the 20th anniversary of the Vancouver Island Music Fest.
Yeah, we sure are. It's coming fast.
Indeed.
Can't wait. We're at the point now where we just want to get down to the park, you know. It always gets to that point right about now where we've been working on our laptops for so long and making so many plans and talking to everybody, and you just get to the point where all you want to do is see that what you've been working on is real, and that kind of sinks in once you finally get down to the park.
Good luck with all that last minute stuff. Hope you find a time to get some sleep in there.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Doug Cox, executive producer and artistic director of the Vancouver Island Music Fest. Time is running short. With less than 3 weeks to go, weekend passes are sold out. The campsite is sold out. There's a few day passes left and some volunteer opportunities still open, but don't expect them to stay open for long. That wraps up another Music Fest podcast. I'm Dan McLennan. Thanks for listening. Also, thanks to Doug Cox for taking the time to keep us up to date. And thanks to Juno Award winner Helen Austin and Todd Butler for the wonderful theme song.
We can sit together and watch the show. Oh, in any weather, we'll watch the show here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest.